This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Primary recap. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka on this Wednesday, June 15. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
South Carolina Congressman Tom Rice has lost his primary race to a candidate endorsed by Donald Trump. Here are other closely watched results.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell is throwing his support behind a bipartisan agreement on gun control legislation.
Summer vacationers planning to visit Yellowstone may be limited. Sections of the national park could be closed for the season due to flooding.
And how to make money off the clothing that you used to wear to the office.
When you sell the clothes in person, you usually can charge a little more online. As you can imagine, people are online, they're comparing your item to maybe 10 other items. People are a little bit more transactional online, whereas they're more likely to make like an impulse buy in person. So this can be a really good way.
Annie Nova at CNBC on the different ways to sell your work clothes either online or in person. We have results from a number of closely watched primary races that tested the power of former President Trump's endorsement. In South Carolina, State Representative Russell Fry, who was endorsed by Mr. Trump, defeated incumbent Congressman Tom Rice. Mr. Rice voted to impeach Mr. Trump following the attack on the Capitol. Mr. Rice addressing Mr. Fry in defeat.
Hey, Russell. Tom Rice. You ran a great race, and you're going to make a great congressman, and we'll do anything we can to help you along.
Elsewhere in the Palmetto State, Congresswoman Nancy Mace won her GOP primary challenge against former state lawmaker Katie Arrington, who had earned Mr. Trump's endorsement. In Texas, a special election signaled Hispanic voters continue to move toward Republicans. Respiratory care practitioner Myra Flores, a Republican, defeated former Cameron County Commissioner Dan Sanchez, a Democrat, in a district that President Biden carried by 4 percentage points in 2020. A bipartisan framework on gun control legislation has gotten a major boost. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell has endorsed the agreement, which will help get the package crafted by Democratic and Republican negotiators to the Senate floor as soon as next week.
If it leads to a piece of legislation, I intend to support it. I think it's progress for the country.
The proposal would crack down on illegal sales of guns, fund mental health programs and school security enhancements, and close the boyfriend loophole that allows convicted domestic abusers to buy guns if they aren't married to their partner, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer.
I believe in the Second Amendment. I believe there's a right to bear arms, but there are reasonable limitations. The Brady Law, the assault weapon ban, among them.
10 senators from each party signed on to the framework over the weekend. The framework is the product of bipartisan talks following deadly mass shootings at a supermarket in Buffalo and an elementary school in Uvalde, Texas. Trying to help his dismal approval ratings, President Biden used a speech to union members in Philadelphia to go after Wall Street and Republicans while defending his economic plans.
The problem is Republicans in Congress are doing everything they can to stop my plans to bring down costs on ordinary families. That's why my plan is not finished and why the results aren't finished either.
Meanwhile, in recent weeks, top officials in the Biden administration and Federal Reserve have publicly conceded that they made mistakes in their handling of inflation. Behind their errors was a misreading of the economy. Here with details is Nick Timiraos, economics reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Nick, what mistakes?
Gordon, there were two mistakes I think you can trace it back to. One is that policymakers saw the crisis hitting and they immediately looked back at what had happened in 2008 and 2009 when the policy response seemed like it was aggressive, but it fell short and we had a long, wrenching climb back. It took many years to get back all the jobs that had been lost. This was not 2008. You know, this was a completely completely different economic shock. Nothing we really have any experience with, shutting down the economy for however many days, 90 days, opening it up in fits and starts, sending people a bunch of money, pushing interest rates very low, mortgage rates with a two on them in the front, 2.75%. And so we're telling people, stay inside your homes. You can't go spend money on plane flights and movie theaters and restaurants, but we're going to give you money because, you know, you might have lost your job and we don't want, you know, to have mass deprivation. And so spending on goods soars and the supply chains aren't able to handle it. And we have a lot of demand and a completely bottlenecked supply side of the economy. So those two things, fighting the war of 2008-09 and a completely different economic shock than what we had in 2008-09, really messed things up when it comes to getting the inflation that we had and that we have now.
And all these inflation or economic experts didn't see this, or their voices were ignored? Any feel for that?
There were some people who did see it. Now, I think part of the problem is that a lot of those people weren't credible because they had similarly warned of very high inflation in 2010, and we didn't get any of that. There were a couple. Larry Summers is probably the most well-known, who wasn't, you know, wrong about high inflation. He wasn't warning of high inflation in 2010. He was warning of high inflation in 2021, and we got it. But if you look at the models that most academics or most economists use, even in the private sector, they all missed this. And that was because the models just don't have a way to build in the kind of shocks that we faced last year. If I went back and looked at the Wall Street Journal, we have a quarterly survey of economists. And last July, we had 63 economists. We asked them, where do you think core inflation will be at the end of 2022? And more of them thought it would be below 2% than would be above 3%. So that was after several months of high inflation last year. The whole kind of economic profession got this wrong. But, you know, those models do a lot of work inside the Fed and the White House. And so they also got it wrong.
What do you think of the regrets?
Well, you know, I think if you look at let's talk about the Fed. The Fed had just come through an experience where inflation was quite low. It wasn't even hitting their 2% target, even though the unemployment rate had fallen to a 50-year low. And the Fed's models had said, when you get unemployment that low, you know, resources are tight, that's a tight labor market, wages are going to rise, prices are going to rise, but that didn't really happen. So as we came out of the pandemic, Fed officials said, all right, this time around, we're going to provide more stimulus for longer because it looks like we might have moved too soon to take stimulus away last decade, and they made a commitment. The Fed is very concerned about being stuck with zero interest rates and not being able to cut anymore to stimulate the economy. So they make promises. They make promises about how they'll conduct policy in the future. And the promise they made in September 2020 was to avoid making the mistake we made last time, we'll keep interest rates at zero until we hit maximum employment. Little did they know that, you know, in 2021, we were going to have even more stimulus. We were going to have vaccines that helped speed along the reopening of the economy. And so once inflation began to pick up, they could have said, you know what, forget that guidance. This is a different world now, and we're going to raise interest rates. Mm. But they wanted to prove the commitment to make their promises credible, and so they stayed with interest rates lower for longer. Now, it was a matter of months. We're only talking about a 3 or 6 month delay, but that ended up being costly, at least to their reputation.
Thanks, Nick. Nick Timiraos, economics reporter at The Wall Street Journal.
When you're an innovative business, every blinking cursor is an opportunity. What will you do with it? Will you make something better or create something new? Our Dell Technologies advisors provide you with expertise and tools with Windows 11 to do incredible things. Because we believe there's an innovator in all of us. To do more with a Latitude laptop, Dell Technologies recommends Windows 11 Pro for business. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday. If you missed anything, by the way, you can check out a podcast of today's show. It's available every day on the This Morning with Gordon Deal app, plus Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Yellowstone National Park will remain closed to visitors through at least today. due to dangerous flooding conditions, which have prompted park evacuations and left some in surrounding communities trapped without safe drinking water. Meanwhile, a Montana helicopter company transported about 40 people the past 2 days from a community airstrip in the town of Gardner in Park County. The park announced Monday afternoon that all park entrances were closed to visitors, citing record flooding events and a forecast of more rain to come. Park Superintendent Cam Shawley.
A lot of debris, especially in areas where the rivers ran across the roads and brought down substantial numbers of trees, which will require considerable work to clear.
CNN says the abundant rainfall and rapid snowmelt combined to produce up to 3/4 of a foot of water runoff, which is similar to the area receiving 2 to 3 months of June precipitation in only 3 days. Park officials say the most severely damaged northern section may remain closed until late October or early November. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
High temperatures are enveloping a third of the U.S. population as wildfires in Arizona and California sparked during the heat wave are growing. Excessive heat watches, warnings, and advisories are in effect from the upper Midwest to the southeast. Brian Hurley of the National Weather Service says records are toppling.
St. Louis, for example, was 99 degrees on Tuesday. The record was 97 in 1987. Louisville, Kentucky, had a record high of 96 on Tuesday. The previous record was 94 in 2017.
A dome of high pressure, also sometimes called a heat dome, will generate well above normal and record-breaking temperatures through tomorrow.
Number two.
Two police officers have been killed in a shootout while investigating a possible stabbing in a suburban Los Angeles motel, and the suspect died at the scene. El Monte Interim Police Chief Ben Lowry says the officers killed were a veteran of more than 22 years and a rookie with less than a year on the job.
These two heroes paid the ultimate sacrifice. Today they were murdered by a coward. And we are grieving and it hurts.
Lowry says the officers confronted the suspect and gunfire erupted inside a motel room. The gunman then fled into the parking lot where he was killed.
Number three.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell has endorsed a bipartisan framework to reduce gun violence, giving a major boost to negotiators' efforts to get a package to the Senate floor as soon as next week.
I think if this framework becomes the actual piece of legislation, it's a step forward. A step forward on a bipartisan basis.
10 senators from each party signed on to the framework over the weekend. Air pollution, which is primarily the result of burning fossil fuels, takes 2.2 years off the global life expectancy for each person, according to a new report from the University of Chicago. The report found firsthand cigarette smoke reduces life expectancy by 1.9 years on average, while alcohol and drug use reduces life expectancy by 9 months. Air pollution is so dangerous because it's impossible to avoid, especially for people who live in polluted locations. So long, Internet Explorer. Microsoft shutting down Explorer today, fulfilling last year's promise to retire the once dominant browser. Internet Explorer had been supported by Microsoft for 27 years.
All right, thank you, Jen. Coming up next, how to unload unused work clothing.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for spending time with us on this Wednesday. If you're spending less time in an office these days, why not turn some of your old office wardrobe into some extra cash? Ideas and strategies from Annie Nova, personal finance reporter at CNBC. Annie, what should we keep in mind?
So a lot of people are finding as we come out of the pandemic that either their employer has said they don't have to come back to the office at all and they can work remote, or they're doing a hybrid where they're in the office less And even people who are going into the office are finding that the expectations around what you wear in the office are changing. After so much time working from home, there's more allowance for people to dress casually.
All right, so you say you can get cash, for example, a handful of sites or apps maybe you can use, mm-hmm. like what?
Yeah, so there's some online resale marketplaces. Tradesy is one, Poshmark, and ThredUp is another. And you can go on these websites, and the rules vary, or, you know, kind of the how you go about doing it is a little bit different, but they will allow you to sell your used work clothes, and they take a fee usually, but you can still make some money off of the clothes. So at Poshmark, for example, you take photos of your items, you set the prices, the company charges a flat fee of around $3, and in some cases they'll charge a little bit of a commission if it's a more expensive order, but it's kind of cool because you set the price yourself and the buyer pays for the shipping, and that's that.
Okay, so that's really the most like hands-off approach, it seems, right? You just ship it, they price it for you, and then send you a check of some kind?
Yeah, and that can be really good if you don't know exactly how much each thing is worth, or, you just don't want to, you know, go through all the work of the photographing and selling it yourself.
How about consignment shop? How does that factor in here?
Yeah, so a lot of people will live near a consignment shop, so that's if you would prefer to just drop it off at a store or to speak to a person about what your items may be worth. You can go to the Association of Resale Professionals online, and they have a way for you to search by zip code to find a consignment shop near you.
How about a garage sale?
Yeah, so another expert I spoke to, who actually wrote a whole book on garage sales, said that garage sales can be a great option to sell clothing. There's just a few things you want to keep in mind with that. Usually you don't want to just sell clothing because it's going to be a mix of items, you know, maybe some old kitchen utensils or pots or some toys that your children have outgrown or, you know, other things you want to bring in. Just the more variety in a garage sale, the more people are likely to attend and to stop by. You want to make sure that the clothing is hanging on racks or on a table. That can be fine as well. You want to make it look, you know, as nice as possible. And the expert I spoke to said that when you sell the clothes in person, you usually can charge a little more online. As you can imagine, people are online. They're comparing your item to maybe 10 other items. People are a little bit more transactional online, whereas they're more likely to make like an impulse buy in person. So this can be a really good way. And again, if you have other items you want to get rid of, it's a good opportunity. A few other tips is Fridays or Saturdays are better days for the garage sale. And you really want to like market as much as possible leading up to your garage sale.
I hadn't considered this too. You referenced jewelry you can throw in there if you have some office-specific jewelry.
Yeah, this online marketplace with a really great name, I Do Now I Don't, helps you sell earrings, rings, necklaces, and brooches. And this is going to be for like a little bit more high-end jewelry, but maybe you have a really nice watch that you're like, I'm never going to wear this anymore now that I don't go into an office. And that can be a really great spot.
Thanks, Annie. Annie Nova, personal finance reporter at CNBC. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Want to eat healthier, but every supplement you've ever tried seems like the better it is for you, the worse it tastes? Then you have to try AG1 from Athletic Greens. I started taking AG1 because I wanted more energy and better gut health. What I didn't expect, the taste is better than any supplement I've ever had. I drink it, like it says, before anything else when I wake up. I guzzle those 8 to 10 ounces before my coffee and start my day knowing I've already gotten the recommended daily intake of all the good fruits and veggies. There's definitely a mental boost knowing you've started the day off on the right foot. I tackle the day now with more confidence and energy. AG1, by the way, is not only lifestyle friendly, it's cheaper than getting all the different supplements yourself. Try AG1. I love this product. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/Gordon to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. athleticgreens.com/Gordon.
No fear. Just facts. This is America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday, June 15. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. An incumbent South Carolina congressman loses to a Trump-endorsed candidate in a GOP primary. Many expect the Fed today to raise interest rates by 75 basis points, not 50. Heat wave in Texas made worse by a water main break in Odessa. Machine maker Caterpillar moving its headquarters from Illinois to Texas, citing costs. Basketball star Brittany Griner's Russian detention extended to July 2nd. And the Reds' Joey Votto makes a fan's day by making a TikTok with her. That story in about 20 minutes. At least 20% of the $122 billion of American Rescue Plan funds given to public schools is required to address learning loss caused by the pandemic. But Congress otherwise granted districts broad flexibility. Many districts are racing to use COVID funds to launch long-needed construction projects under a deadline to spend the money by early 2025. Scott Calvert, reporter at the Wall Street Journal, has a look at what some are doing. Scott, what have you found?
You know, the grand total is more like $190 billion that's going to K-12 schools as a part of these three different COVID aid packages that have come through D.C. So two of them were under President Trump, one under President Biden. The biggest of the three was the Biden one, which is about $122 billion going to K-12. And the way it works is at least 20% of that money, that $122 billion, has to be spent on learning loss, because there's obviously been a lot of learning loss due to the pandemic. But otherwise, school districts have a lot of flexibility in what they can actually spend that money on. We were interested in looking at how they are putting that money toward addressing these old facilities, these old school buildings that exist in so many parts of the country. And we wanted to get a closer look at that in one particular place. So we traveled to Milwaukee, and we went to one high school on the south side of Milwaukee that is getting about $10 million to do a couple of things that they consider really important. In one case, it's going to be a brand new gym. And the other is they're getting four new science classrooms with, you know, fume hoods and all the latest gizmos, so they can do labs that high school students at a high performing school like that want to do and should do to learn. So that's where we went.
Got it. All right. So you also touched on cities like Philadelphia and Detroit. What's happening there?
Yeah. So Philadelphia. So again, this American Rescue Plan, that's the $120 billion. So Philadelphia is putting, they say, $325 million of the $1.1 billion that they're getting in ARP funding into all sorts of projects like new buildings and ventilation work. Detroit is putting in even more, $700 million of its, you know, roughly $1.3 billion in total COVID aid, all three programs, for facilities. So these are big dollars. And one of the part of the logic is that this is one-time money, right? So what can you spend money on in sort of a one-time basis that makes sense? And facilities would sort of fall into that category. It's also not cheap to do this sort of overhaul work, right? So that's where a lot of the money's going, and that's the sort of the rationale for it.
We're speaking with Scott Calvert, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. His story is called "Schools Can't Spend COVID Aid Fast Enough for Aging Buildings." I think your reference too, a lot of schools nowadays are more than 50 years old. So a lot of HVAC stuff going in them.
Yeah, there's a lot of ventilation work, you know, to improve air quality. And so that's happening certainly in Milwaukee. They're putting a lot of their facilities money is going into improving ventilation and airflow. And, you know, you can see the COVID tie-in. And it's also just in general good to have good airflow in a building. But some of it's really even more basic than that. Like, there are a lot of schools in Milwaukee that don't have window screens. So, you know, if you open the windows to let fresh air in, you're going to get the bugs come in. So they're doing that. They're doing things like carpet replacement. I mean, some of it, you know, seems fairly basic. But, you know, if you're in a school building like that day in, day out, it matters.
Yeah. How about the deadline to spend it? Is there any shot that's going to be a problem for schools? I mean, construction costs are soaring right now.
Well, they're hugely worried about it. I mean, you know, and the deal is this. So that $122 billion program, so that's that has the latest deadline. And that all that money has to be spent by like really early 2025. Now, the U.S. Department of Education has said, look, you know, if you need an extension, we can give you, you know, 18 months, maybe longer in our circumstances. But there's definitely this sort of headlong rush that districts feel to get the money spent. Yeah, I mean, you've got, you know, the supply chain issues, so it can be difficult to get the supplies. You've got contractors that are in high demand, and so they have sort of their choice of projects to bid on. And so in Milwaukee, they have actually brought on several of these design build for firms that do both design work and construction. They also have hired a consultant to help them with their sort of project work and also like encouraging contractors to bid on projects. And I was talking with the facilities director there, and he said he's really concerned about, you know, getting all of this done in the time that they have. And he said it's a tall order. And so there's definitely a sense that it's going to be difficult to get it done, you know, in time.
Thanks, Scott. Scott Calvert, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. Coming up next, another funny punishment for a fantasy football loser.
Today's Mic Drop is brought to you by Dell. For your small business needs, call a Dell Technologies advisor today at 877-ASK-DELL.
Hey, thanks for joining us on this Wednesday. It's time now for the Mic Drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, we're only a couple months away from the start of the 2022 fantasy football season, but it seems the losers from 2021 are still dealing with their punishments. A New York Giants beat writer named Zach Rosenblatt outed a friend named Chris on Twitter, posting pictures of him sitting in a nice restaurant next to a giant Winnie the Pooh stuffed bear, his punishment for finishing dead last in their fantasy league. Now, at first, it doesn't appear to be crowded in the restaurant, so it looks like Chris's embarrassment could be minimal. Later, though, the restaurant fills up with guests, and then the topper, someone tips the restaurant staff that it's Chris's birthday. So workers gather and sing happy birthday to him, assuring that everyone would see him and his date.
Happy birthday, dear Chris. Happy birthday to you.
The original post and video clip have been seen hundreds of thousands of times. Zach later posted that Chris got a standing ovation on his way out of the restaurant.
That's a really good one.
Yeah, not only walking out of the restaurant, but I assume carrying the Winnie the Pooh bear with him on his way out, so making him look even more funny.
He seemed to be a good sport, because as they were singing Happy Birthday, he followed that up by blowing out the candle, but kind of leaning into Winnie the Pooh.
Like the two
of them together were blowing out the candle. That is very clever.
Good stuff.
And a good looking, like a Zupa Depeche that the Winnie the Pooh was eating there. I see the mussels and some clams in that dish. Looks like a good dish.
Did he have a glass of wine? I guess he had to buy Winnie the Pooh the food as well for him to not eat it and take it home in a doggy bag.
It's a really good punishment.
Yeah. And speaking of embarrassing video, there are few worse feelings than offering up a handshake or a high five to someone who doesn't reciprocate, leaving you looking super awkward. Now imagine that happened to you in front of millions of people on TV. One Golden State Warriors fan is feeling that pain this week. On Monday night, as the Warriors were beating the Celtics to take the lead in the NBA Finals, TV cameras caught an excited Warriors fan looking to double high-five the woman next to him, presumably his wife. Unfortunately for him, she either doesn't notice his hands up in high-five position or chooses to ignore him, leaving him hanging for a few excruciating seconds before he finally gives up. The red-faced moment did not go unnoticed by TV viewers who shared it all over social media. Many were mortified for the guy, wondering if you can die of secondhand embarrassment. Others noticed how seamlessly he went back to his original position after the snub, indicating this likely isn't the first time something like this has happened.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a fair point, because his hand, he raised both hands.
Yeah, I know.
And then had them withdrawn, I would say, within less than a second.
I mean, it felt like longer than that, but
in
reality, it was probably a second or less. Yeah.
But I think that last observation is correct. He is a veteran of being snubbed when it comes to high fives.
I mean, just looking at the two of them, he looks like the super enthusiastic one of the two, for sure. It looks like he's always putting his hands up to high five people all the time.
And she appears to be more of a student of the game. She's into like analysis. She's completely looked away from him,
right,
which is why she doesn't see his high five offering.
They've been down this road before. Like, you can tell that this has happened, you know, at least 5 or 10 times before.
That's very funny. Thank you, Mike.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for being with us. Be sure to follow us on social media, including our newly updated Instagram page. You can find it at This Morning with Gordon Deal. A few automakers have aggressively priced some electric vehicles to the point that they can cover their premiums in energy savings in just the first 3 years, if not much sooner, making them cheaper to own than traditional vehicles. Fox News listed a couple of today's discounted electric rides. Number one is the Chevrolet Bolt EV. Chevy recently slashed prices on the Bolt EV to $26,595. That compares in size to the Chevy Trax SUV, which starts at $22,995. The Bolt EV costs only $550 to charge at home each year. That is $2,000 less than the gasoline that a Trax will burn through over 15,000 miles, which means an owner will come out ahead in under 2 years, even if gas drops sharply. Number two, the Nissan Leaf. After a tax credit, the Leaf is $21,000. That's $90 more than a Nissan Sentra, which has a $1,600 higher annual energy cost. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Voters in South Carolina, Maine, Nevada, and North Dakota headed to the polls for Tuesday's primaries, with several races again testing the power of former President Trump's endorsement, while a special election in Texas signaled Hispanic voters there continued to move toward Republicans. State Representative Russell Fry, who was endorsed by Trump, defeated South Carolina Congressman Tom Rice, who had voted to impeach Trump. But also in South Carolina, Republican Congresswoman Nancy Mace won her primary against a Trump-backed challenger.
With record inflation and the challenges we're seeing today at the gas stations and the grocery stores, we need strong fiscal conservatives, people who are going to be serious about balancing the budget, who are going to be serious about cutting taxes, who are going to be serious about finding solutions to the challenges our country faces today.
Number two.
A third of the U.S. population is under heat advisories as a week of record-breaking temperatures continues. A heat dome is expected to bring triple-digit temperatures to portions of the Midwest, adding to the scorching temperatures already baking the Southwest. Meanwhile, wildfires are continuing there, driven by gusty winds and very dry conditions.
Number three.
The House has passed legislation that would expand security protection to the immediate family members of Supreme Court justices, sending the bill to President Biden's desk for his signature. The House took up the Senate-passed version after Republican Senate leaders warned Democrats that an attempt to broaden the bill to include families of court staff wouldn't make it through the Senate. The Capitol Police Chief, in a new letter, says a group tour of the Capitol complex led by Republican Congressman Barry Loudermilk of Georgia a day before the January 6, 2021 riot by a mob of Trump supporters was not suspicious and at no point entered the Capitol itself. The letter came nearly a month after the House Select Committee investigating the riot asked Loudermilk about the tour he gave. The Capitol Police, citing surveillance video, confirmed Loudermilk's statement that he never entered the Capitol building itself with a group of constituents. Squid Game, the reality show. Netflix making a real-life version of the dystopian South Korean drama and opening up the action to contestants around the world. In the original series, people desperate for money compete in playground-style games and losers die in grisly ways. Thankfully, the reality competition will be non-lethal. In Squid Game, the challenge, 456 contestants will compete for $4.5 million in winnings. No details, though, on what the contestants will be asked to do.
All right, thank you, Jen.
When you're an innovative business, every blinking cursor is an opportunity. What will you do with it? Will you make something better or create something new? Our Dell Technologies advisors provide you with expertise and tools with Windows 11 to do incredible things. Because we believe there's an innovator in all of us. To do more with a Latitude laptop, Dell Technologies recommends Windows 11 Pro for Business. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL.
Thanks for being with us. Cincinnati Reds first baseman Joey Votto is nothing if not a crowd pleaser. A young girl displayed a sign behind the dugout before Monday night's game between the Reds and Diamondbacks, and the sign read, "Joey Votto, will you make a TikTok with me?" Bally Sports Ohio's Jim Day reported that 12-year-old fan Gene Parks from Phoenix collaborated with Votto, who delivered a gritty dance that would make Bengals receiver Jamar Chase proud. Votto recently joined TikTok this season and has seen many of his posts go viral. By the way, Cincinnati went on to win that game against the D-backs 5-4, but it's not clear if making TikToks with fans is a help or a hindrance. Votto went 0-for-3 with a walk, but the last place Reds have now won 3 in a row. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.